49. Under pressure. They stared out the porthole. Modo grabbed another set of levers, moving the arms on the pod, which he assumed were designed to open underwater doors or harvest seaweed. The arms were too short.
"Can we use them to push ourselves closer?"
Colette asked.
"They can't reach the ocean floor." "We are truly stuck," he said. "Perhaps someone in New Barcelona has spotted us." "There were only the mothers, children, and old men left," Colette said.
"And Comrade Garay," Modo added.
"Yes, but they would need several comrades in aquasuits to drag us into that chamber."
"How much oxygen remains?"
"I would guess another hour's worth."
She tapped the dial and the needle dropped further.
"Or half an hour."
"Stop tapping it," Modo said.
"Why? Should we pretend we have more oxygen than we do?
I felt better when I thought we had an hour's worth."
"How deep did Monturiel say New Barcelona was?"
50 meters, Colette answered.
"We have to get through that door," he said.
"We have to battle the pressure." The air was clammy, her hair drenched. She ran her fingers through it.
"I'm a mess, and it looks as though your rash is returning."
Modo knew the neckerchief still hid most of his features, but he was losing control of the area around his cheekbones and eyes.
"That doesn't matter. How do we safeguard against the pressure? Our rubber suits may keep it at bay for a few seconds, but our ears and eyes? I can only guess what damage would be done.
Maybe they have some sort of emergency kit in the pod." They searched around the compartment, under the seat.
"Aha!"
Modo sat up, displaying his treasure victoriously.
"Diving goggles. At least we'll be able to see."
"Yes, but are they fashionable?" Colette said as they slipped them on. The lenses enlarged their eyes like insects, and they both laughed so hard that Modo worried they were getting giddy from lack of oxygen. He took a deep breath.
"Once we are in the lock chamber, there won't be as much pressure, correct?"
"Yes, it will only be the pressure from the water in the chamber, not the ocean."
"So we only have to endure the deeps long enough to enter the chamber."
"Correct.
And we must close the sea door, find the switch that empties the chamber, and somehow hold our breath until it drains.
Assuming the draining mechanism will work."
"You sound doubtful."
"Oh, I'm not doubtful. We don't have a chance in Hades of making it," she said, laughing.
"But it is our only option. I suggest we divide the duties. You, Monsieur Muscle, swim out there and open the door. I'll stay here out of the pressure until the door is open. Then I'll swim straight to the switch, which, as I remember, is located at the opposite side of the chamber. You close the door behind me so we can drain the chamber."
"Good plan. Now let's take a few breaths."
"Oh, one more thing, Modo," Colette said.
She lifted the bottom of his handkerchief and kissed him on the lips. If he hadn't been sitting down, he would have fallen over. As it was, he inadvertently spun the pedals a few times. Modo had never been kissed on the lips. His thoughts were bouncing around in his head like mad.
"She kissed me. She kissed me." Her lips were so soft.
What was that?" he asked.
"A kiss, silly. For bonne chance, Modo. I believe in luck, and I don't want to go down without a fight. Now open that door."
He leaned forward and turned the handle that opened the pod door, then held on tight, prepared for all the water that would rush in. Nothing happened.
"Oh no, the pressure is holding it closed," Colette said.
Modo pushed until the door opened a crack, and ice-cold water began seeping in, swirling around their shoes as it rose higher and higher.
"I'm so very tired of being wet," Colette whined.
But before Modo could answer, the water was up to his neck. He took a deep breath, waited until he heard Colette take one of her own, and pushed. Immediately, his body felt as though several loads of frozen bricks were piled upon it. He launched himself the short distance and grabbed the wheel on the entrance to the lock chamber. He was floating too high, too fast. He needed leverage. He looked down, and, spotting two loops set in the ground, he stuck his feet in them. It was like moving in stone, trying to turn the wheel. His lungs compressed. Yet he wasn't panicking. He could function in the pressure.
It was as though his face and his body, which had so often changed shape, were adapting to this environment. He'd felt this sort of pain before. Finally, the door clicked. He pushed it open and kicked until he was inside. He couldn't see clearly, but a blur of long, dark hair and then legs passed him. He pulled the door closed, planted his feet again in another set of footholds, and turned the wheel. When the door was locked, he kicked his way farther into the chamber, realizing he was seeing greyness through one eye. Was his brain affected? Even worse, he spotted Colette a few yards away, floating without moving, her hair like wild, dark seaweed. He pushed off the floor toward her, shooting up so quickly that he nearly missed her. At the last second, he grabbed her extended arm, but he didn't have the strength to swim down and pull her toward the lever that would drain the room. "We're doomed," he thought, as his head smashed the top of the chamber. He bobbed up a second time, his limbs going numb. His lungs screamed for oxygen. He bobbed a third time and broke into a pocket of air. He sucked in a breath. Air! He lifted Colette, and after sputtering for a bit, she breathed too. Slowly, the bubble of air grew larger. The water was receding. Minutes later, Modo found himself on the floor, sopping wet, but breathing normally. He flipped back his goggles. The interior chamber door had been opened. Fish were flopping around between him and Colette's still body. Footsteps splashed in the water, but no one was there.
"I couldn't let the ocean kill you," Griff said, chuckling harshly. "Not when it would be so much more satisfying to do it myself."